Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Voices in the Night. It's been a long time since we've been on, and of course we're coming, making our comeback again, taking care of a few things. Want to introduce everyone to our co-host for tonight, Jay. How are you doing tonight, Jay?
Not too bad. How about yourself?
Not bad. I can't complain. As you know, yourself and everybody knows, we haven't been on in the last couple weeks. We've been taking care of a few things behind the scenes, getting some other work done with the group, taking care of some personal things, but we are going to be coming back in full force, and we have a few different things going on. So that's one thing that, you know, we'll keep everybody updated and posted on events we have going on, some lectures and things like that. But we've been, you know, just trying to take care of everything, and it's not as easy as everyone, you know, seems to think it is at times, but what are you going to do?
That's for sure. We just make the best out of it. I know, yeah, we have been going through some roller coaster of a time, but we're getting things together, and I am psyched for the next couple months. So we got a couple of good things in the works, and it's gonna be a good time.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's why we need to take some time off to, you know, reiterate everything. And especially, you know, one of the events we have coming up in July, which we're not going to say anything yet, but once we get that going, it's going to be very exciting. And get, like I said, a couple lectures come that we're going to get working on, and just all around being busy, not only with the group, but with our personal lives. So it gets to be rough. I mean, especially when you want to cut a time slot, say every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, you know, you always have to make sure that everything that you need to be done, it has to be done before the show, after the show, the day before, the day after. It's like another job.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I learned it the hard way this evening. You can't wait just 2 hours before the show or an hour before the show to get everything in order, because you're going to think it's all in order, and then last minute, bam, you're not.
Yeah, I know. That's I had the same situation going on with the with Mike. You know me and computers, Jay. It's two, you know, oil and vinegar. We just don't mix. And you try to get everything working and up and set, and then again, something else goes wrong. Something else gets thrown into the works that just makes it a little more of a nightmare.
But PCs.
Yeah.
Going to Apple.
I'm going to go to Hawaii. That sounds like more fun.
Yeah.
But what we're going to do tonight is, of course, you know, we're going to be updating the show. A couple of very interesting things going on, and we're going to try to redo the whole show and basically make it more user friendly and have a lot more people involved in it, especially our listeners. You know, a lot of times we do get some call-ins, we do get a lot of emails and everything. And what we're going to do is, I'm not going to say much about it now until all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, but we are going to have some shows that are going to be bringing in more of the audience for them to participate. And you know, if everybody wants to email us back and let us know if they'd like to be a part of it, especially if you're more than likely, and especially if you're part of another paranormal group, that would be great. Which
Actually, I wanted to actually mention that this evening. I didn't give you a heads up on beforehand. We have that the roundtable, as you know, I've been working on. Very tirelessly, I should say, to get that set up. And our first roundtable show should be the last week in June.
Yes, and that's going to be very exciting. That's one thing I want to thank you, Jay, for, is getting that set up for us. And, of course, that's going to be dealing with some, you know, big names in the field, people that we've had on the show before, and, you know, people we haven't had on the show before. And it's basically going to be a paranormal talk amongst everyone, where we're going to check, you know, different ideas, bring them out into the open, and all that stuff. So it's going to be really good once we get that going, and I believe it'll open up the field more, especially out here on the island where, we do have a lot of teams out here.
And more, we have more teams than we have ghosts out here on the island.
Yeah, that's what it seems to be. of course. But what I'd like to do right now is I'd like to bring on our two guests for tonight, speaking of Long Island ghosts. We have two guests that have been paranormal investigators and authors on the island here for some time now. And, we're going to speak with them a little bit about everything going on in the field, things that they have going on, and whatever they'd like to mention to us. So right now I'd like to bring on Kerry Ann Flanagan Brodsky and Joe Giacchino. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. Thanks, Dan. And it's nice to hear from you, Jay. We're excited to be on the show. And I can give you a little bit of some background information on it. For those listening, the name of the book that I wrote, the first one came out in 2006, was Ghosts of Long Island, Stories of the Paranormal. And the sequel to that came out in the fall of 2008, Ghosts of Long Island 2, More Stories of the Paranormal. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I'm a writer, I'm a photographer, and I had written a couple of books on the history of Huntington. And when you're researching older homes and things like that, there's always a ghost story that seems to come up. And for years, people told me they loved the ones with the ghost stories in it. Why don't you do a book just on Ghosts of Long Island? And I sort of put it on the back burner for a while because of the nature of the topic. And as the years went on, I was looking to do another project. My husband had said to me, why don't you do that Long Island ghost book that you have talked about? And with the onset of shows like Medium, Ghost Whisperer, and Taps, it's a hot topic, as you know, and people are interested in giving their views, and it's not thought, you're not thought of as being crazy anymore. People are very open to this kind of thing, and everyone experiences things. So I decided to do it, combining local history and investigations. But in order to do this, I said, well, I really need someone that could help me on the investigative part of it. I needed a paranormal investigator, and where was I going to find one of those? Well, as luck would have it, during one of my lectures for the Huntington Historical Society, which specifically one on ghosts that I was doing around Halloween, in walked Joe Giacquinto, and we hit it off immediately, and I asked him if he wanted to help me with the project and be the chief paranormal investigator, and he agreed, and from there, we went on, and we combined our lists. Joe will tell you a little bit about his group and what he's involved with. And we went on from there to do investigations, interviews. I did all the research, photography, and it's been a success. It's been a wonderful adventure for us. We've helped a lot of people through the grieving process as well. The books are very spiritual as well as historical, and it's just been great.
Excellent. Yeah, that was going to be my next question on how you guys met up and what got, how you got involved with each other, and there you go.
Exactly. So I don't know if Joe has anything else he wants to share with that.
Well, it was an interesting, hi, Dan and Jay, very nice to talk to you tonight, and it was interesting the way we met because I wasn't even going to go to the lecture. I had gotten this flyer from someone who couldn't go, and I said, I'll just go to this thing. Actually got there the wrong weekend, and it was pouring rain, and I said, I guess the thing was canceled, and I realized the date was wrong, so I went back the following week. Met Kerry Ann, it was a great lecture, and we hit it off right away. There was a chemistry there. It felt like we had worked together before, even though I'd never met her. And the interesting thing was when I left the lecture, I went back to my sister's house. She lives in Huntington, and turns out that we find out that her best friends were also Kerry Ann's best friends, and both groups of people didn't know each other. So it turns out that we all were in the same circle, but we didn't know it at the time until Kerry Ann and I met that night. So it was interesting how there's a thread of involvement with different groups of people, and you just kind of have to tap into it. And it's part of the whole spirituality and paranormal thing. So,
yeah, that's actually how the spiritual aspect came about, because when we started doing the project, originally I had anticipated the book to be a book on local history, combining stories about things that go bump in the night. And it literally turned into a journey for Joe and I. And it was amazing, the people that we would meet along the way, the things that they would share with us. Some of the stories are very intense, very emotional. And, you know, I was able to combine this whole thing and with history. And we've gotten a great response from it. And with the second book, as Joe was saying, how we sort of had this common thread, the second book was based on what other people told me when I was doing lectures, when I was doing author events. People would come up to me and say, do you have this in the book, or I have a story, and we'd check it out. And 9 times out of 10, the story would work out, and that's how the second book was created, basically. People wanted more. What was interesting is that how I wrote it, you know, history can be very dry. So I've tried to turn it, and the book reads more like a novel from what I've been told by people, even though it is nonfiction. And what people wanted to see more was how Joe and I interact and the actual investigative process. So in book 2, I really took the reader on that journey, and there's a lot of fun back and forth between Joe and I, plus what we say to the people we're interviewing. And so people really like that aspect about it. It's been really really a lot of fun. And Joe and I just have a great time with it. We've had a lot of great experiences.
We do. And, you know, many people come up to us when we've done the book signings or we've been interviewing, you know, our clients during these ghost investigations. And a lot of people always ask, you know, when is the shoe going to drop? Have we seen the monster in the closet? And, you know, Carrie Ann, I think she'll agree with me that we've really never had that happen. We've had a very positive experience, as Carrie Ann mentioned. It's become more spiritual through the travel of the second book, the journey of the second book. And we found that that's really what people wanted and began gravitating to us to the point where some of the lectures and the book signings, it was tough to actually close the event, right, Carrie Ann? Because people wanted to learn and ask more questions, so we had to.
Exactly.
Really, there was a real energy there, people wanting to know. And it wasn't your Hollywood, you know, the type of creepiness like the Chucky doll syndrome that people get.
Right, and that's what Joe always says. Exactly. Joe always says that we have taken the so-called creepiness out of ghost investigating, and it becomes something that's more normal. And what has especially made it work, when people see us, we've been told many times, they said, you two don't look like ghost investigators, especially where I'm concerned, because they say to me, you know, they expect people to be very gothic, I guess, or whatever. I don't know what they're thinking about, but they say, you're a regular person. You're a soccer mom, and I am a mother, and this is what I've been writing about and working with Joe. So I think the whole fact that we're involved in the community, that we have jobs, that we do things, and it makes it more real for people because they can relate to us. And, you know, Joe has a lot of talent. He is clairaudient, which he'll tell you about. And for me, I mean, I have no special gift or ability, but over time I've come to understand things that go on and accept, you know, life after death and that they can communicate with us. And the more you're on top of things, the more things start to happen. So it's been great because I've learned a lot from Joe. Being out in the field with him, and he's taught me everything about EVPs and orbs. And then the rest, as Joe always says, we use our common sense, and we just go out there and get it done.
Exactly. The thing is that, like you were just mentioning, a paranormal investigator could be basically anyone. You don't have to have any certain type of look or anything like that. It's just people who are interested in the field, where, you know, people are, they're electricians. They may work in the local grocery store. They could be anywhere.
Right.
It just doesn't have to be any specific type of person, gender, or anything.
Yeah, everyone can experience these things. And that's also another part of the credibility of the book, is that we've interviewed mainstream residents in the community, business owners, parents, I mean, you know, regular everyday people that have these experiences. So it's just amazing. It's constant. We're still getting people coming up to us saying, you know, I have a story and this has happened. People show me things at lectures all the time, photographs, or they want Joe to listen to EVPs. So we've really gotten a wonderful response from that.
Exactly. I mean, I know it. I'm sure it happens to you too. When people find out what you do, you know, the first thing they want to say is, "Oh, is that a full time job?" And you're like, "No, no, no." Then they sit there and ask you, like, you know, really, you know, like you said, "Well, let me tell you about this." And they tell you after a while, they just tell you, "Hey, I never thought you would be one," or, you know, didn't know anything.
Yeah, people open themselves up. They do. They open themselves up to us, which is really, really pretty neat.
Because I did a little bit of a research study on how many people, you know, believe in non-believers in the paranormal, and more people believe nowadays and have experienced things but are either afraid to tell anyone or just writing it off as, you know, oh, yeah, that's just something freaky that happened. But when it starts happening more than once, it happens twice, three times, then you really have to sit there and say to yourself, well, you know, it's a pretty good possibility. Maybe I'm not, you know, maybe I'm not that far-fetched or whatever they're thinking. You know, it kind of puts a little bit of a, not necessarily, it brings the doubt out of them a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what Joe and I try to convey, that to listen and be more attuned to things. People ask us, you know, what is it like? You know, they sometimes believe that we go into a room and it's like poltergeist happening, and it's just not like that. They're very subtle ways of communicating, and we don't like to use a lot of fancy stuff. We have dabbled with the ghost meter with the second book, but we use our recorders, we use our cameras, we use common sense, and I rely on Joe and his clairaudience for a lot of this, and, you know, he's really developing also as a medium at this point, and so I rely on his input. But everyone can experience things, and the more you're aware of things and attuned to things, they start to make sense over time, and you realize that you are communicating with the other side.
Exactly.
And I think that what's happening, too, is in the field of ITC, which is intertrans communications. Basically, it's the study of how spirits use technology to communicate with us. And Tom and Lisa Butler of American Association EVPs are fond of saying that, Tom's fond of saying that spirits monkey around with electronic equipment to, you know, to communicate or to get our attention. And I think today it's making it easier for everyone out there to really be more open to this, because you have so many wonderful electronic devices, as well as simple devices such as a dowsing rod, divining rod, a ghost meter, or just a regular old pocket digital recorder, that people everywhere are getting this connection, and you can hear really clear examples or see really clear pictures from the other side. There are, of course, people that are always skeptical, and one thing Carrie Ann has always said from the beginning during the whole the book projects that we've done, is that we're never out there trying to prove or disprove anything. We let people make their own choice. And I think that takes a lot of pressure off us, because we're not trying to set ourselves up as an authority. We're just regular people that are out there interested in this field. We want to share what we've come across with others.
And we haven't just shared it with a book. It's sort of interactive. Joe has his paranormal group, which he'll tell you about. But if you go on to Joe's website at www.joegpi.com, you can actually listen to the EVPs from our investigations, and you could follow along with the book. And we leave it up to the readers and to the listeners to decide whether or not they can hear them. I mean, we try to play mainly Class A, Class B. But, you know, I think we have a couple of others thrown out there as well. But it makes it very interactive, and to have people experience it firsthand. We've even done some lectures where we've been able to play the EVPs in front of an audience, and it's interesting to see people's reactions to it.
Yeah, we've done that too. That's the best type you can get. Everything else is pretty much, you know, everybody's going to have their doubts about photos and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even sometimes the EVPs, but they're one of my favorites to do. I that's one thing I can't deny. That's definitely one of my favorites.
Right, exactly. And we've gotten other things too. Joe, in the first book, got this wonderful picture of what we think is a Civil War soldier at Quaker Cemetery in Bethpage, and that appears in the first ghost book. And then the second one, I was able to get a picture of a little girl that supposedly haunts the Ketchum Inn in St. Emeritus. And I'm a professional photographer by trade. That's what my degree is in. So I know what I'm dealing with as far as equipment and the environment and that type of thing. And I had taken a whole bunch of photos in this room that had windows to the second floor. And it wasn't until I was really analyzing them and noticed that this girl appeared in one of the pictures. And she wasn't in the window on the other prints, just in this one. So it is interesting when you get something like that.
Exactly. I mean, guys, you know, when you come up with your evidence, do each one of you analyze it yourself, you know, yourselves personally, or do you, like, you know, if Carrie Ann gets something, do you bring it to Joe and Joe?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, definitely. Especially if I get anything, because I always think that it's a privilege if I get something. So the first person I speak to is always Joe, and I ask for his opinion, and we do a lot of back and forth, and he'll run things by me too, especially now that we've had the second book, and I've learned a lot. You know, I'll give him my opinion on things, but we definitely, we really have worked very closely on anything that we did pick up to determine what we think it is.
Yeah, I know that's the way our team likes to work. We do the mm-hmm. same thing. You know, we each share the information, see, you know, just to pick each other's brains to say, hey, you know, we do have a couple of, you know, photo specialists on our team that, you know, they know a lot more about it than I do and the next guy, but yet, you know, sometimes it's just, you get that shadow of a doubt in your mind saying, hey, is this really what it could be? And then,
right.
you know, as everybody else looks over it, they each come up with their own opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the same thing with the EVPs. If we get something on our own personal phone, on our own personal recorders, without saying anything to anyone or the other group, we'll just pass it along to them, let
right.
them see if they believe it's saying the same thing as what we hear,
right.
and it just, you know, it just helps out a little bit more, because you don't want that
okay.
subconscious being put into someone's mind saying, hey, this is what I think it says,
right.
and then it just blows over, because that's exactly what you'll be listening for. Maybe
mm-hmm.
somebody else will feel something different. You never know.
Exactly. And you know what's interesting? Before I met Joe, I'd never even heard of EVPs. And again, we've been working together for a couple of years now. And when he first told me about it, I said, okay, now this is something, you know, I always believed in the afterlife and everything. And I have my opinions of ghosts from hearing my own stories, family stories and things. But EVPs I'd never heard of. And Joe's telling me this, and I'm saying, I don't know. I don't know what I think of this. This is kind of out there. And on our very first investigation, we met up with a couple who lived in Greenlawn. And they were telling us about a house that they had lived in previously that was in, I guess it was Huntington Station. And it was a horrible, horrible weather night. I mean, we had torrential rain, and Joe was coming from Hampton Bays. So he got very delayed, and this was our very first investigation. So I was doing the interview myself. I was there, I don't know, probably about 2 hours before Joe arrived. And it was me and this other couple. And I had my digital recorder. It was also the first time I was using digital for my prior books that came out in the early 90s, my historical books. I had been using a recorder with a tape cassette, believe it or not. So Joe had warned me. He said, you know, you might get a voice on this. And I'm like, yeah, whatever you say. So I was doing the interview, and it was just them. There's no kids in the house. There was no TV on, nothing. And I did the interview. Maybe 2 days later, I was transcribing it, and all of a sudden, towards the end, clear as day, you hear the sound of a little girl saying, hold me, in a loud whisper. And, I mean, I had the recorder probably about, I don't know, 5 to 6 feet away. It was a big room. I had it in the middle of this coffee table. So you know the difference of someone who's speaking within a distance of 5 to 6 feet and someone that's holding a recorder up to their mouth. There's a big difference in what that sounds like. And that's what the girl sounded like. I was so shocked. I played it for my husband like 5 times when I found this. And I said, am I hearing things? And he was scared out of his mind. He said, oh, my God, there really is something here. And it's almost like it had to happen to my recorder, because at that point, then I really knew. I said, wow, this is really possible. And if I was able to get it, so it was sort of proof for me, it all worked out. Again, Joe and I always think that there were other hands in us getting together and us doing this project, that there's more to it. And I think that that was one of the points that I had to experience that for myself in order to believe it and to understand it.
It's true. I mean, that's what happens with a lot of us. We all, there's a lot of us out there that don't believe it and will deny, and then when it happens to you and you know we can deny it, and then you're like, oh, okay, there is such thing as EVPs. There is such thing as paranormal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people have really taken an interest and they want more. So Joe and I have actually, we're trying to step this up to the next level by creating a Ghost of Long Island TV show. We've been working with producers for a year now, and we have a finished pilot, and we think it's pretty wonderful. It just recently got accepted into the Long Island International Film Festival.
Great.
So there's a screening for that that the public can go to. It's July 13th to Monday at 2 o'clock p.m. And if you go to my website, which is www.ghostoflongisland.com, you could see the trailer. And it's really wonderful. They really followed through with what we were trying to get across as far as investigators about our working relationship and about the history and the things that we were talking about. The first, the pilot features the Country House restaurant in Stony Brook. And Joe and I have spent a considerable amount of time there. It's very, very active. So that's actually our pilot. And we're searching for someone who, a network that would either take it on as a local show or a producer who would want to, you know, act as an executive producer to sort of support this so that we could take it to the next level and maybe do, you know, a 10 or 12 episode show in which we would be in it and basically going to some of the places that are featured in both of the books. I mean, there's 60 all in all. 30 in the first one and 30 in the second one. And we've been to some wonderful places all over Long Island, so we would love to take it to that next level and have people not only get to read the book, but to see Joe and I in action and that we could finally take them with us on the journey.
Yeah.
So how many times do you investigate these locations?
When I was working on the book, I mean, we were doing it, I don't know, Joe, like almost weekly, right? It was pretty intense. We had an intense schedule for a while.
There was. There were some times when we would have five events, five investigations within a short span of time, which if you look at the amount of time that we need to do to set up, to make the connection with the individuals, Carrie Ann's doing the research, and then after that I'm doing the EVP and photo analysis. Carrie Ann's doing the photo analysis. She's doing the writing. It's just a tremendous amount of work. And I remember one day, Carrie Ann, was it for the first book or the second book where, maybe it was the first book where I said, oh, we have like, I'm thinking we have till the summer, you know, end of summer.
Right.
We have 20 more investigations doing.
Right.
Carrie Ann said, oh, no, they have to be done by the end of next month. I'm like, what? She said, well, I have to write everything. So I'm like, oh, okay. So all of a sudden it was every 3 days we were going here, we were going there.
Right.
Things were changing. There was weather that we had to contend with.
Yeah.
We had some amazing experiences, but we got through it. But I think that, you know, we learned a lot through that experience, and we do, as Carrie Ann mentioned, we really work well. You know, we're kind of like this, you know, Mulder Scully team. I mean, it's from the Carrie Ann's a historian. She's factual. She's pragmatic. You know, she's down earth. And I'm kind of a little bit out there because I've got the sensitivity thing going on. So I'm hearing things as we're investigating, and I started calling these things out to Carrie Ann. And then later when we would play back the recordings, Carrie Ann would come back to me many times and say, you know what, remember when you heard this or you thought you felt this presence in this room? Well, guess what? And then we would find that we had not only the EVP evidence and the photography evidence that Carrie Ann had, but we were also getting it through our six senses as humans.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this matchup of the practical, human approach plus the scientific equipment gave us an edge that we found worked really well in the field. And I think that's where we've been able to go to the next step, which is to involve people, because there seems to be a big gap between, on one side of the fence, you have the mediumship group of people who are just doing the readings and they're doing the psychic aura analysis and everything. On the other side, you've got the ghost investigators out there going in the cemetery at midnight. So there's a big gap between both groups. And really, we're all in the same big picture. We're all doing the same work. We're just doing it from different talents. So I think Carrie and I have been able to combine those two levels of expertise, the classic investigation and the more the spiritual and the mediumship and the tuning in. And as far as investigating, it's interesting because, we went through all these, 60, Carrie Ann, 60 investigations for both books.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have one place, which is out in Calverton, which we've been to now, I brought my group to 6 times. We just had number 6 visit was just this past weekend. And the relationship we build with the spirits, they're coming through more and more, and the energy is building up to where it's almost like going out to a Starbucks and just having a latte, or an espresso and waiting for the spirits to come and sit next to you and you just have a conversation with them. So it's really, there are places we've gone back to on more than one occasion, and we find that we get better and better at what we do.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And the other thing that Joe and I absolutely love is the history end of it. And other people, I had, originally when I planned these books, I had geared them only, towards an adult audience. But I've had mothers come up to me and say, my kids are finally reading because they're learning local history, and they're interested in it. I mean, what better way to teach history to kids than through a ghost story? And for Joe and I, we have literally gone back in time, and it was fun. Joe, one of the things that Joe loves is when he talks about our experience at Borders Riverhead. We did a book signing there, and how Joe describes it is, what do you say, Joe, a campfire circle, and we had all these like 12 and 13 year olds, and they were just mesmerized to hear the stories and the things that went on. I mean, a lot of people aren't aware that about the Battle of Long Island. It was actually the first battle that took place after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And so Joe and I really focused our efforts not only on the spiritual aspect of things, but on history, and we spent a great deal of time out in Strong's Neck, and that was just amazing for us because we walked the actual trails where the Patriots and the Culper's Firing and Indians, and it was really, really remarkable, and
it was
great.
It was remarkable, and the history component not only gives a level of credibility to everything we do, but in addition to meeting such wonderful people that are historians that work in this field on a regular basis, they're not in the paranormal field. But it became evident to me during maybe the first book, but then I think going into the spirituality of the second book, that there was this need for not only just to go out and say, can I get an ECP of somebody saying, hello, my name is Bob from the other side. I wanted to go beyond that, so I started what I call the EVP History Bridge Project, which started initially at Rainham Hall. And Carrie Ann was in one of our big sessions that we did because some of the EVP groups, like EVP, they've been doing these big circle get-togethers where every Thursday night or something, all the researchers will get together at their home and they'll try to channel spirits and then they record EVPs and they get together and see what they got. So I took that concept to a different way, and I said, wouldn't it be cool if we could go into a haunted location and actually ask the spirits who were coming through to give us history and verify and validate and add to history, such as places like Rainham Hall, because they lived there during that period of time. So if we could get, say, Robert Townsend to come through from the Revolutionary War, imagine what it would be like for him to tell us some facts that nobody knew about because he was actually there. So we wanted to not only give a level of credibility to the EVP project, but also a historical purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But I just see one problem with that. If it's information that the EVP has given you that because he was there, I could see from a skeptic point of view that we can't verify this information, so what makes it true?
Well, that's a good point, and that is actually one of the goals of the project, is to try to bring out information that can be verified. Let me give you one specific example at Rainham Hall. We had a spirit who was coming through on a regular basis called Dan Smith, and we actually have an EVP where he actually identifies his name, Smith. And then we asked him his first name, and we heard Dan, and it was a Class A EVP. Well, he came through on several sessions that we did there, and later I got a very excited call from one of my contacts at Random Hall, who said that they were renovating and cleaning out the basement, the cellar, or the basement of the place, and they came across a trunk, and on the trunk was a monogram, DS, and inside the trunk was actually a handwritten letter from a lady who was writing to her friend about a Daniel Smith. Hmm. There was more to the story, but we found that the spirit had followed one of my colleagues to his home and was actually interacting with him on a regular basis, because Dan said that he told us he was from the military. He'd been a soldier, and my colleague was also interested in military history, and he's been getting nonstop evidence from Dan. So we have a few spirits that come through on a regular basis that we, Carrie and I, talk about, and they often show up. And so I think there is a merit to it, but I agree that it's one of those things where you just have to keep plodding along and being as factual and careful in your data gathering as possible.
Exactly.
And then as far as like the rest of the story, I mean, I'm very careful with, again, being a historian as well, to be very, very accurate. I mean, you look at the books, I have a huge bibliography. So we put all the factual information in there, and I sort of entwine it with the story and our investigations, and then we put it out there if we should get something that's historically based on the paranormal end, and we put it out there and we try to sort of, you know, justify it and see how it works within the frame of the story. And as Joe said, we've had many interesting experiences, and just to be a part of the whole thing, a part of the history. One of our favorites from the last book, and it was, I think, our second to last investigation, was at Execution Rocks Lighthouse off of Kings Point. And it took weeks and weeks and weeks to make these arrangements, because I, first of all, had to track down who was in charge, and it was the United States Coast Guard, and I had to go through all different channels to get clearance to get us out there. And then the weather was a problem. Twice we were set to go out, and the tide wasn't right. A storm was coming. I mean, we had to go on this whole thing. But Joe and I did hook up, and we were sent out with a crew of three guys from the Coast Guard who took us out to the lighthouse. And it was an amazing experience for us, because this is not open to the public. Some of the places in the book are open to the public, some aren't. So, again, we could bring the reader to places that they wouldn't necessarily be able to go and photograph it and get the EVPs and that. So we walked all around this lighthouse inside out, and the story behind that, before there was a lighthouse, there were always these giant rocks that jutted out, and it was dangerous in the early days. There were a lot of shipwrecks and that type of thing. But eventually, when the British occupied Long Island, they rounded up a lot of the patriots who were more, you know, really for the cause, and they took the patriots over to the rocks, and as the legend goes, during low tide, they put stakes in between the rocks with chains, and they tied them to the chains, and then when the tide came up, they would die, they would drown. There were other stories that said, you know, sharks came into the water and they were eaten and that type of thing. And there was an overall sadness that we felt, especially Joe, when we walked around. And then, of course, when we went through the lighthouse keeper's house, we do a lot of climbing and walking and all sorts of things. And that was a day that we won't soon forget, just because of the smell of the place. I mean, because no one's been occupying it, and the birds that land there, I will never, and I described the smell in the story, actually. And Joe, we had heard, we'd gotten this on the recorder, a sound of a wailing sound, like a woman screaming out in anguish. And we all heard it, and I give the whole dialogue of that in the story. We did have one funny incident, though. After we did all this climbing, to try to get into the light was very difficult. It was very narrow. And Joe and I mean, the Coast Guard guys, they just hopped in there like it was nothing. And we're, with equipment and everything else, passing it up, passing it through, trying to find a way to get up in there without getting ourselves covered with all this stuff from the birds and peeling paint. And we finally get outside. We make it, and the views are beautiful. And within seconds, a helicopter comes flying right at us, and I was just standing there saying, what the heck is going on? We can't be in trouble. We're here with the Coast Guard. And the helicopter came so close. It was Nassau County Police Department, and they saw activity going on, so of course they were checking it out. And then once they saw the Coast Guard, they just circled around and waved and flew up. But they came so close we could actually see them. So I turned around, I looked at Joe, and he was smiling from ear to ear, and I said, what are you smiling at? And he said, this is great. I feel like we're on Magnum PI. And it was just one of those moments that, you know, we felt bad that we were having such a great time considering what had gone on there. But, you know, experiences like that have really kept us going, and because it's just been a lot of fun, and we get to go places that, you know, other people don't get into, and we get to share it. So it's been great.
Yeah, that's especially if you're with a group that, you know, and you become the researcher of the group. I mean, I've done that before. I know exactly. It's not an easy job. To me, that's one of the most. It is the hardest job of if you're involved with a group.
Right.
You have to make sure everything's accurate and, you know, precise. But yet, the stuff you learn and the stuff you never knew, it's like gold.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, you know, Joe does. He could explain to you now about his actual group and what they do. And he's gotten such a huge response and a lot of members because of the book. So, you know, I was glad for him because he does things, you know, separate from me because I'm also working on other writing projects and things. So Joe has really been promoting his group and to help other people learn about this kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah, we started. I guess it was the Ghost Town of Long Island group started in 2001. There were two ladies who had started, and they were very dedicated to doing this type of work, very interested in the field. And it started sort of as a Yahoo chat group, you know, interest group. And I got involved with it in 2005. I was just there and read some of the posts, and then they had a couple events that went on, and eventually I found that I had a real affinity to it. And then in 2006, when I had met Carrie Ann in 2006, and after a break in 2007, we started working on the second book in 2008. So the group that I was involved with continued to evolve, and then eventually there came a point where the group went in two different directions, and one group split and went one way, and the other group split and went the other way, and the lady who was in charge of the group at the time, she said, you know, I'm kind of ready to let this go and retire and do other things. So I said, well, we have, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 people here and there that are part of this group. And I said, well, you know, can I take it over? So I did. And then it started to add members. And then at one point I said, you know, we really have a lot of stuff to put on the website. I really want a little bit more control over the look and feel of the site. And I don't want to have a lot of pop-up ads and things. So I opened up the domain, and then we had the joegpi.com domain, joegpi, I don't know what that is, the Gator domain. And the group just continued growing. Eventually we added on a sign-up sheet so that we could separate the public from people who were posting, you know, more personal information and wanted to be part of the member, the core team. And that thing has just gone. It's grown and grown, you know, every month, and I think we have over 400 members right now. So, you know, people are interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
400 members from Long Island alone?
Mostly, yeah. We do have some people from other parts of the world, plus a few members from other organizations that I'm a member of. And, but mostly I would say Long Island area. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them sign up. Mm-hmm.
So, Ghost, the Joe GPI. And now, is that just a forum group where people just go in and speak? They talk about their experiences and their investigations, things like that, or is it an actual investigative group that they get together and they actually go investigating? Because 400 people, That's a lot of places that people to try to get investigations for.
Yes, it is. The groups kind of figured out who wants to go out on the actual investigations. We do both. We have online activities and information and research. We have an EVP and photo archive, which has a bunch of stuff in it. If you sign up on the premium membership, you get access to all the stuff. And I have hundreds of hours, or maybe 1,000 hours. I don't know at this point, but I have several hundred hours of recordings. And it's just I've got years of stuff to put up yet to analyze, let alone from just the 60 or 70 investigations that I did with Carrie Ann. I've been doing this stuff since the 80s, so it's quite a bit of stuff. But the group, we have a core group, we have a core team, and we have a group of, say, 30 to 40 to 50 people that rotate and go to different events. We have lectures, we have workshops, we have ghost tours. There's something for everyone, and there's something for everyone. There's free events and there's paid events. And we let people choose how much involvement they want to have. A lot of people just sign up the basic membership just so they can see what the latest EVPs are or see what Carrie Ann and I are up to. But it's really been a great venue. We're getting more sophisticated, too. We know we have to beef up our blogging and add some podcast material and stuff. So, we're moving more into technical area. But, as you guys pointed out earlier, you said, it's a lot of work. Research, it's an all-consuming thing. And
it's so much work that sometimes some people lose interest and they don't want to do it anymore. Meanwhile, in the long run, if you put the work in, it will pay off.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. That's for sure. I mean, I found that out even with the lectures. I mean, I had 30 speaking engagements this past fall and a lot of press when the book came out. And some of them Joe comes with me, some of them I do by myself, and then he does separate things as well. We always like it when we can do a lecture together if people want us both. But, that alone, that was a lot of running around all around and talking about the book and selling the book and promoting the book. And so there's other aspects to everything, like Joe said. There's, one thing leads to the next. And, it's a difficult process, but it's definitely one that's worth doing, in my opinion.
Yeah. I know it's a little bit off base, but I'm extremely interested in Satan's Trail. You wrote about it after even your first book.
Right, that was in the first book.
Yeah, that was out in off of North Ocean Avenue, correct?
That was Mount Sinai. We have a funny story with that because Joe and I had a heck of a time trying to find it, and on a wild goose chase, and I relayed this, our adventures of that in the first book. We went through the trail. We finally did find it, but we went through the trails, and we couldn't find the houses, and we did find an area that was cleared that there were, cement steps, Joe? I can't remember, with daffodils next to it. We found this clearing where a house used to be.
And some sort.
Mm-hmm. And then as I continued to do research, we had gone on some Google Maps or something, and we found out that several of the buildings had been taken down. I mean, I've heard mixed things since. Some people have told me, the building that's haunted is still there, and you didn't go far enough or whatever, or it's being occupied by someone. So with Satan's Trails, like any of the so-called legends on the island, there's always going to be some, some play with it, that you can't really get all of the information. You have that. You have Mary's Grave. You have Lady of Lake Ronkonkoma. These are stories that we do consider legends and part of our cultural history on the island, and who hasn't looked for the Mary's Grave and that sort of thing. So it's sort of hard to pinpoint some of the stuff because the information has been passed along, it sort of becomes a game of telephone. Where someone says, well, this is what happened, and then you hear that, and then you tell someone else, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And there was probably, at some point, some truth to it, but you can't really pin it down. So with Satan's Trail, there are several stories of this girl who became possessed, and so I try to include all the different variations. So that story that I include, the variations, Mary's Grave and Lady of the Lake, because there's just so many out there now, and they seem to get larger and larger in size. So with those, I would say those are just fun stories. You can't prove them. They're not historically accurate.
That's
right. And the urban myth has always been there and always will be there. And part of that, I think, is an interest level. It attracts people because, you know, let's face it, we were bombarded with stimulus from television, internet, radio, advertising, and, you know, we have to get people's attention sometimes, and I think a little bit of the drama is okay. But, you know, when Terry and I first tried to put the book list together of the places we thought merited going to visit that we thought were not really or just myths but might have some basis to them, you know, I started like everyone does. We started Googling, and, you know, we got the same, you know, 50 or 100 urban myth places in New York State. Every website you went to, not every website, but several websites, they all had some version of the same place, Amityville, you know, places like that. So we had to go beyond that. And I think to Carrie Ann's credit, I think the research she's done, I think it's what sets what we've done apart is that we've gone to actually a lot of cutting-edge places, not just gone back to ones that are myths. We've opened up some exploratory territory there. What do you think, Carrie Ann?
Especially in the second book. I mean, when I set out to write the first book, I had no idea I would be writing a second one. So when you're writing a book on Ghosts of Long Island, of course you're going to include those legends and those urban myths and all that. So that was included. But we sort of drifted away from that a little bit more with the second book and put places that really had more meat to them, more history. And again, I mentioned earlier about interviews with people that are having modern, you know, experiences, things that are happening to them in the past 10 years, communication with lost loved ones. So we had sort of the legends and the myths that were in the first book were sort of replaced with some of these more spiritual stories. So that's where I would say there's a slight difference between the two books, you know, because we were going on what people asked us. People wanted more. I included a couple in the first book, and people loved them. They said, we want to know more, and so we put it out there. We call them, like, modern ghost stories. So there's slight differences between the two books in that regard.
That's one of the things, like, I did a lot of studying up on, like, legends and lores. That's one of my things. I like to separate the factual stuff from the non-factual
stuff. Right, yeah, exactly.
And just a real quick thing, getting back to the Mary's Grave part, what I had found out that I've mentioned this before, many years ago back in the 1700s, as we all see throughout the years, there are specific names of people that are very popular for that year.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, you know, back then, Mary, John, they were very, very popular names.
Yeah.
I've gotten many questions about, have you guys ever found Mary's grave? And I'm like, well.
And this is why it makes it very confusing. They were 8 billion Marys, you know.
Exactly. Right.
So which Mary are you talking about? And they all seem to have a white dress, though.
Yep.
I know. I was talking with some members about that one day when we were at Sweet Hove Road, and we came to the conclusion that every town in the U.S. has a married grave and a Mary somewhere.
Right.
I've actually done a pretty in-depth research, and I've been to a bunch of different cemeteries just to go there and do some research and things like that. And I just decided one day, and I wish I could remember the name. I remember the name, but I can't, you know, try to keep everything confidential and not let people know that, the Night Paranormal's been here, you know,
right.
Especially
mm-hmm.
the private cemeteries.
Right.
In one cemetery, I actually counted, I think it was like 12 or 14 first names of Mary.
Of Mary, I know.
And
so
John,
and
the name John was about the same, maybe a little less. And I was amazed. That's what got me into doing the research on it. And it also, of course, you know, probably all started, you know, people gather around a bonfire, whether it be kids or adults that just want to tell spooky stories around Halloween or any given night. And, it's Mary over in, you know, in such and such a cemetery. And, of course, Mary's grave. Every cemetery you go to is going to have Mary, John, and everyone else. So, you know.
That's how it starts, you know. It usually starts with that, like you mentioned, the ghost story around the campfire kind of deal. And so there's so many aspects to this, to the book, to the paranormal, and you can't just pinpoint it to any one particular thing, because it really combines such a huge realm, and that's what we've tried to put out there, you know, and we continue. I'm booking now for lectures for the fall, and Joe has a lot of things that he puts out there, so, you know, listeners can go on to either one of our websites and find out where we're going to be and what's up and things that we've done on the news, and just try to get the word out. That's what we feel we have to do. We have to talk about life after death. We're living in very difficult times. People want more answers. They want to know how to communicate what happens after we die. And so Joe and I feel that the books have led us to help people in that way.
Great. Yeah, because I know I'm definitely going to be checking it out myself. I'd like to come to you know, some of the lectures you guys have. I've never got to meet you, Carrie Ann, but Joe, really? I met, I don't know if he remembers, I met him briefly at a paranormal gathering a few months ago. I believe it was,
yes, remember.
It was for Island Ghost. Erica from Island Ghost had invited me.
That was a great party. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, and there's so many different people that you meet out in the paranormal field that, especially out here on the island, you don't realize how many there are. And of, you know,
I know, because that's the big thing, is that people can't believe that Long Island is haunted. You know, you think of Cape May, New Jersey, New Hope, and all these places like as being the so-called hot spots. We have a ton here. You know, we have a ton of haunted locations, but also spirits are everywhere. So spirits are constantly around us. So all these groups are forming and people are interested. I mean, we get huge responses to lectures. I mean, we get big crowds most of the time because, like you said, there's a lot on Long Island.
Mm-hmm. And especially, like you said, they're all around you. It's up to them whether they want to make themselves known or not.
Exactly. And it's also up to the person, too, if they want to be open to it. If a person's not going to be open to it, then, you know, you have a dead end there.
Exactly. I mean, what got me into it was just having an interest from when I was younger and not really believing that, hey, you know, there's people out there going to think you're weird because you don't hear anything about it. You start reading these different books and all, and it gets you into it more and more. And then you either join a group or form a group yourselves. And it was, you know, everybody remembers one of their first investigations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of my first ones was actually at Raynham Hall many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing the research part of it, and I was amazed by a lot of the stuff that, you know, happened there, you know, throughout
mm-hmm.
history.
Yeah.
And it's right here on the island. And then you're putting the paranormal into it, and it just spikes your interest even more.
That's exactly it, and that's why the books have worked, because of combining those two things, because, you know, people are like, I didn't realize that happened on Long Island. I didn't know I could go into Raynham Hall and see these things for myself.
And it's cheap,
so it helps. It promotes the history. You know, it helps these organizations.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, you tell them, okay, you guaranteed you can get in there usually under $5 per person.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you start telling them the story of, you know, Benedict Arnold and all that. And like, that happened out here, and that's how it happened, you know.
So much happened. This was a real big hot spot during the Revolutionary War. And Joe and I have just really delved in and explored so many areas. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, Strong's Neck, it was a huge hot spot. We made many, many trips out to that area, and it's a lot of people don't know about it because it's a very small community and it's privately owned and that sort of thing. But, I mean, it's like going back in time. And Joe and I actually feel like we have gone back in time when we go to these places.
Yeah, that's, like I said, there's so many places out there that are open to, where, you know, if you speak to the people that work there, they're going to have no problems with telling you any of the stories.
Right.
Some people are, no, you know, depending on the person you speak to, nothing's ever happened here, but yet there's somebody standing, another employee standing 10 feet away and say, oh, come here, I got something to tell you. Or
that's how it happens.
Mm-hmm. And especially with, you know, nobody really knows what happened 100, 200 years ago out here on the island. It's all,
mm-hmm.
parts are overgrown. Somebody builds mm-hmm. a new house there, well, could be some, you know, activity left within that area that could,
mm-hmm.
you know, just want to manifest itself or make itself known, you know, 100, 200 years later.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, we've seen that in Montauk, investigating the Montauk Manor and the cemetery next door, and you could just feel it. You could feel the energy. You could feel what went on there.
Yes.
And there's definitely presence there.
And so if any of our listeners are out there from, you know, from Florida, California, wherever you may be, check into a little bit on the island here. Go to the library, read up on it, go buy books, and, you know, hey, it's a very interesting spot that's, you know, not really well known, but yet we're here.
Exactly. And the books are available on Amazon, and they're available at most of the Borders on Long Island, at Book Review, at Best Bargain Books in Center Reach. And if you go onto the either one of our websites, you know, you can get more information on where to get the book and our lectures and Joe's group and all the good stuff we're up to. And look for that TV show. We might be doing some previews on the island as well. We're hoping to get that started in June and then in the fall. And then, of course, we have the film festival coming up. So we hope people will come out and watch us on the TV.
Great. Well, just real quick before we're starting to run out a little bit of time here, but I'd like for you to give out all the information one more time, the websites and name of the book and so on and so forth, so everybody can gather it up and head out there tomorrow to Borders and everything to grab Ghosts of Long Island.
Okay. Yep. The first one's called Ghosts of Long Island, Stories of the Paranormal. It was put out in 2006 by Maple Hill Press. And the second one is Ghosts of Long Island 2, More Stories of the Paranormal, also put out by Maple Hill Press, and that was in 2008. And any information on myself is available at www.ghostsoflongisland.com. And we have a lot of information on there, and then Joe will tell you his information.
And if you want to check out my website and see some of the samples of EVPs and read about some of our investigations and listen to the EVPs from the book, feel part of the experience, my website is joegpi.com, and you'll have a great time.
Great. Well, Joe, Carrie Ann, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on with us. And, you know,
thank you. It was great.
Explaining about, you know, how you guys met and, you know, just the different things you guys have going out on the island. And, of course, Jay, myself, and our team, we'd definitely like to, you know, keep in touch with you guys. And,
definitely.
You know, just paranormal talk about it, everything that, you know, goes on out here. Because a lot of times, you know, like I said, people don't know of anything out on the island, and I speak to, you know, many different other paranormal investigators from other states, just, you know, dealing through friendship and then through, you know, through show-related, and always the first thing that they ask is about Amityville.
I know. Get away from Amityville.
Yep, that's the Long Island staple right there.
Exactly. That's why we want people to know there's more than Long Island than Amityville. There's a whole lot more. So.
Exactly.
So they can read about it now.
There you go. All right, guys. Well, of course, you know, I will be in touch with both of you, you know, just to, you know, do a little bit of chatting here and there and, you know, comparing some notes. And once again, thank you very much for coming on the show tonight.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure meeting you guys. Thanks.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Take
you
care.
Guys have
thank
a
you.
Night.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, Jay, that was an awesome show tonight. It's always nice meeting everybody new.
Definitely is. We went a little bit over, but okay.
Yeah, it's okay. It'll still be able to archive, and I think we should be streaming live for about another 15-20 minutes. So.
Okay. Well, we'll remind everybody about our website as well, www.19nygheteam.com. You can check out our website with the latest news of our group functions. Next week's show, what do we have planned for next week?
Unknown at this time. I have everything logged into the computer, and I want to keep on this. I got a whole bunch of different things open, so of course that'll be written up as to what next week's show is going to be. I have to get back into the screen and start typing everything in. I got everything written down in the book, and we're all set and ready.
Okay. And yeah, we have the hopefully the first roundtable show will be coming up in June, towards the end of June. I'm actually, as I said before, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a great experience and conversation. And well, we have that thing in July coming up, which we'll get into more details closer to the time. But that's another thing I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. So. As you know, a few other members in the group, they're all excited, and you know, it's just something that you know, it's a place that we, some of us have been to before, but yet it's going to be a new experience for some of the other members, and it's a very exciting place. I mean, it's of course, like I said, we want to keep make sure all I's are crossed, I's are dotted, T's are crossed, and make sure everything's, you know, up, set, and ready.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's about the what's going on with tonight lately. You got anything to add?
Nope, that's about it for tonight. And of course, Jay, once we're off the show, I'd like to stay on the line with you for a minute or two. But besides that, you know, we'll be back again next week at the same time. And of course, you know, we will we welcome your emails into us. Any questions, comments about the show, or you know, if you're interested in being a guest or have a good story to tell us, always write in at heretohelp@nightteam.com.
Here to help? That's okay. I thought we had one for the radio show.
Yes, we do, but there have been some difficulties with that. I have to. We've gotten so much in the file network on that. It's just. For some reason, it keeps going to the junk mail and the spam. Everything's getting full, and it's crazy. I like to read all these stories that people send in to us, and it, you know, every time you read them and you say, "Okay, I'm gonna," you know, "I'd like to have this person on the show, that person on the show," you put it into these specific files, and you just lose track of who is who, and then you got to reread the stories and everything, and it gets a little crazy.
Yeah, just as long as you don't lose the files, like for some reason I did. My old computer's been messing up lately. A chunk of files. My system for the radio show went down 5 minutes before the show. Just my luck, right?
Yeah, Murphy's Law. Yeah, nothing you can do about it. All right. So, of course, I want to thank all of our listeners who are listening in tonight and everyone in the chat room. And until next week, we will see you then. Everybody have
bye
a good night.